Welcome back to another episode of the CSK8 podcast. My name is Jared O'Leary. Each week of this podcast is either an interview with a guest or multiple guests or a solo episode where I unpack some scholarship in relation to computer science education. In this week's particular episode, I'm unpacking a paper titled Impact of the CPS Computer Science Graduation Policy on Student Access and Outcomes. This paper is written by Stephen McGee, Lucia Dottori, and Andrew Rasmussen. Apologies if I mispronounced any names. Here's the executive summary for this paper. Quote, the Chicago Public Schools, CPS, leads the nation in computer science education. Each year, 14,000 Chicago Public School students graduate with at least 1 year of computer science. This is the result of a graduation requirement that CPS enacted in 2016. The foundational course that most students completed to fulfill the requirement is Exploring Computer Science, ECS. This evaluation of the impact of the graduation requirement was framed around the CAPE framework, to ensure that a district supports equal outcomes in computer science. They need to develop capacity for schools to offer computer science, increase access to computer science, ensure equal participation, and then examine how computer science experiences lead to equal outcomes. The analysis was conducted through a CME-funded summer fellowship program, which included advanced graduate students and early career researchers. They found the following results. The ECS Professional Development Program supported a rapid expansion of school capacity after the enactment of the graduation requirement. At the time the graduation requirement was enacted, roughly half of the schools did not offer any computer science, and two-thirds did not have sufficient capacity to support computer science for all students. Larger schools with fewer low-income students and a strong college-going climate were more likely to offer computer science just before the enactment of the graduation requirement. Access to computer science expanded significantly after the computer science graduation requirement. Participation in computer science significantly increased across all demographic groups after the graduation requirement. By the time the second cohort graduated after the requirement, the demographics of students taking computer science matched the demographics of the district. Students' experiences with ECS led to equivalent course performance between students taking ECS before and after the enactment of the graduation requirement. The number of students pursuing computer science pathways in CPS doubled after the enactment of the graduation requirement, end quote. If I were to summarize this paper into a single sentence, I'd say that this paper explores the impact of computer science graduation requirements in Chicago public schools. Now, if you want to find a direct link to this paper itself, make sure you check out the show notes at jaredoleary.com and just go to the computer science education content on there. There's a bunch of content in terms of gaming and drumming content. So check out that if you're interested in it, but make sure you check out the CSKA podcast show notes. You can even just click the link in the app that you're listening to this on, and it'll take you directly to this so you can read this paper, which I do highly recommend doing. So the intro of this paper discusses how they were one of the first districts to adopt the Exploring Computer Science curriculum. This was in 2012. And so they did a 4-year pilot program, and then in 2016, they required that all students participate in ECS, Exploring Computer Science, as a graduation requirement. And so this paper is going to explore, well, what is the impact of that? So in section 1.1, which is titled the Chicago Alliance for Equity in Computer Science, they kind of talk about the history of the program. So if you're interested in that, I highly recommend checking out that particular paper, or rather that section of the paper. Now, section 2 is on the methods. So the data that they use was student demographic data, computer science enrollment and outcomes, teacher demographic data, teacher preparation data, and data about school characteristics. And that is directly pulled from page 2. And on page 3, they talk about the CAPE framework, which is organized around 4 different questions. And so the CAPE framework is an acronym, so C-A-P-E. So C stands for capacity, A stands for access, P stands for participation, and E stands for experience. So here are the 4 kind of guiding questions for this particular paper. Quote, how did CPS's capacity to offer computer science change after the graduation requirement was enacted? 2, how did access to computer science courses change after the graduation requirement was enacted? 3, how did participation in computer science change after the graduation requirement was enacted? 4, how consistent were the student experience in and outcomes from their computer science courses before and after the enactment of the graduation requirement? To answer these questions, they had 6 different fellows come in, and these were like early career scholars, graduate students. And so they kind of like each would work on a different section of the CAPE framework and analyze it. All right, so section 3 is on the results, and 3.1 talks about the graduation's requirements impact on capacity. So prior to the graduation requirement, they had a net average of about 15 computer science teachers being added each year, either through professional development or through earning some kind of an endorsement of teaching computer science. But in the first 4 years after the graduation requirement, Chicago Public Schools averaged a net increase of 38 teachers per year, either through professional development or through endorsement. So that rate was more than double what they were previously doing before the graduation requirement. So they're able to do better with meeting capacity within that period of time after the graduation requirement. In addition, by 2020, 82% of neighborhood schools, which is a school type that is kind of like discussed in the paper itself, 82% of them were able to meet capacity. And this compares with in 2015, 2016, it was 22%. And then 4 years prior to that, it was only 3%. So that's a huge increase. If we go back several years from 3% all the way up to 82%. And then for the other school types in the district, the STEM schools had 100% capacity, and then the selective schools had all but one school, so this was around 90% capacity. Now, here's an interesting quote from page 5 to consider. Quote, "It is important to note that CPS would not have been able to achieve the goal of computer science for all students if it had relied solely on fully endorsed computer science teachers. In the first year of the Taste of Computing project, when capacity to offer computer science was limited, more than two-thirds of the computer science teachers were fully endorsed. By the time the computer science graduation requirement was enacted in school year 2016, just over half of the computer science teachers were fully endorsed. By the time the first cohort of students subject to the graduation requirements graduated in 2020, less than 40% of the teachers were fully endorsed," end quote. So when it started, it was more than 66%, and now after a few years of the graduation requirement, it's all the way down to 40%. So meaning the majority of the teachers do not have like full computer science endorsements, which, full disclosure, I don't have a computer science endorsement. When I was still teaching in Arizona, this was several years ago, they did not have a computer science endorsement. So it was basically for the elementary classes that I was working in the K-8 classes, so kindergarten all the way up through eighth grade, they did not have any kind of requirement. So it was really kind of up to the principal or superintendent or whomever to determine whether or not I was qualified enough to actually teach in the classroom. But now they do have a computer science endorsement in Arizona, and I haven't signed up for it because I'm not teaching in the classroom anymore, and I don't really need to worry about that. So if your initial reaction is, I don't know about this, if they're not endorsed, then they can't be good. Well, I mean, maybe, it kind of depends. I know some people who are endorsed that aren't very good at whatever subject area, and then people who are not that are phenomenal at it. Some of the best teachers I've had don't even have degrees in whatever subject area they are teaching or in teaching in general. So section 3.2 talks about how the graduation requirement impacted access to computer science courses. So let's take a look at this figure 2, and this is a figure from page 6. So when they enacted the graduation requirement, 100% of the STEM classes, the students had access to it. Okay, that continued throughout. But for the selective schools, about 90% of them only had access, but by the end of this current study, or where this was published, it is 100%. And then for the neighborhood schools, it was like around 45% or so of students had access, and then it goes all the way up to just under 100% in the neighborhood schools at the time that they published this article. Now here's an interesting caveat to that data. This is from page 6. Quote, "On the strength of CPS's capacity building efforts, the number of schools offering at least one computer science class in the year after the graduation requirement was enacted more than doubled. By school year 2020, all the STEM schools, all the selective enrollment schools, and all but one of the neighborhood schools offered at least one computer science class. The one neighborhood school that did not offer a computer science class instead waived all their students due to their participation in CTE programs," end quote. Okay, so CTE is Career and Technical Education. At least that's the most common acronym for that if you're unfamiliar with it. All right, so in other words, basically everybody would have had it, but that one school happened to waive it because maybe they were doing similar concepts or practices in their CTE requirements. I don't know. So as a result of this graduation requirement, and as a result of the capacity building efforts, basically this said that all of the high schools had access to computer science classes. Okay, so if we have the teacher capacity, if we have access through the courses being offered, how does this impact the participation after the graduation requirement was enacted? So this is where question 3.3 comes into play on page 7. So what they expected is that if everyone was required to participate, then the demographics of the classes should reflect the demographics of the school, which makes sense because everyone's basically being required to be there. Here's a quote from page 7, quote, "The overall participation rates were 84% and 83% respectively. Roughly 17% of each cohort were eligible to receive a waiver from completing a computer science class. Those students were participating in a CTE program, the IB program, or similar career-oriented or college prep program," end quote. Now, when it came to the demographics, when it was race and ethnicity, the numbers that were before this graduation requirement was enacted, the Asian population was higher than average. And then when it was enacted, it mostly was about the same or equal representation that matched the demographics of the district itself. Quote, "With a few exceptions highlighted in red, the percent representation of Asian, Black, Hispanic, and white students taking computer science was within 2% of their representation in CPS overall," end quote. So in other words, it was like pretty close. So that's great. Now, when it came to the gender demographics, they noted that consistently before and after the graduation requirements that there were a higher percentage or population of males attending these classes than there were for female. And there was no demographic data for non-binary students, which makes sense because a lot of school districts don't collect that. And even though I don't appreciate it as a non-binary individual, that's just kind of how things are at this moment. So if you are also a researcher, I highly recommend encouraging districts to collect non-binary or trans data outside of just male and female for gender. Here's a quote from pages 8 and 9. Quote, "Throughout the period prior to the enactment of the graduation requirement, there was an average of 8.5% difference between the representation of computer science students who identified as female and the representation of all CPS students who identified as female. After the enactment of the computer science graduation requirement, the gap in representation had narrowed to 2% or less," end quote. So that's also an excellent little bit of data right there. One of the things that I really appreciate about this report is they talk about students with their disabilities participating in the computer science classes. So this is in section 3.3.1. So they specifically focus on 6 different categories, and this is from page 9. The categories were autism, deaf or hearing impaired, emotional disability, intellectual disability, learning disability, and other health impairment. Overall, after the graduation requirements, there was a significant increase, statistically speaking, between all of these different categories. However, here's a quote from page 10, quote, "5 of the 6 most prevalent categories of IEPs had equivalent participation rates for the first cohort subject to the graduation requirement and were close to the cohort participation rate for all CPS students. Students with emotional disabilities had lower cohort participation rates than the other 5 most prevalent IEP categories in the first 2 cohorts subject to the graduation rate," end quote. So in other words, the emotional disability students did not have as much participation in the computer science classes as the other disability categories. And that's really interesting. I'm curious as to why that is the case. All right, so now let's talk about the graduation requirements' impact on experience. So this is 3.4. So here's a quote from page 10, quote, "Computer science course grades were higher than the other subject areas during the time when computer science was an elective class. Did the rapid expansion of computer science in CPS impact the quality of outcomes that have been achieved under the Taste of Computing program?" End quote. I am not sure what they mean by that particular statement there. And the reason why I'm kind of like raising some questions there is I'm not sure how you can really compare across different subject areas, across different grades, etc. It doesn't necessarily mean that like students enjoy it more or are doing better or worse. It could just mean that like the assessments that are being used are easier or harder in some subject areas than in others. I don't know. There's too many variables here or factors to consider that I'm not really sure what that means. But they're citing a paper that I probably need to read in order to really understand what those like 2 sentences mean. But diving a little bit deeper in 3.4.1, they talk about the comparison of exploring computer science grades before and after the graduation requirement. So they found no statistically significant difference between the before and after grades for exploring computer science, which, I mean, that makes sense. I don't know why a graduation requirement would necessarily impact the grades in there. But to argue with myself, prior to this, it was students who were electing to take it, and now it was students who were required to attend this. And those are 2 very different categories. So when you are teaching a class where students are electing to participate or are paying to participate, that is like night and day different than students who are required to be there in terms of like whether or not they're going to be engaged. So that is an actually very interesting finding because it demonstrates that exploring computer science, whether you choose to be there or are required to be there, is an effective course to participate in. And if you want to learn more about the Exploring Computer Science curriculum, I highly recommend checking out the interview that I did with Joanna Good. It is a fantastic conversation, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes at jaredeleary.com. Now, here's an interesting quote from page 10. Quote, FAM found students who identified as female achieved higher grades in ECS than students who identify as male. Students who identify as Hispanic and Black achieved lower grades than students who identified as Asian and white, end quote. Now, I can only kind of like speculate as to why that is, but there's a lot of research that kind of talks about why different demographic categories perform better or worse in school in general, and I think those would probably apply here. And a lot of it just has to do with like structural inequalities that are placed into it. And here's one more quote on this particular discussion from page 11, quote, Winters found that in the post-policy enactment period, whether a teacher was at least partially qualified correlated with student course grades. Since almost two-thirds of the ECS teachers are endorsed in a subject other than computer science, these results provide validation for the ECS professional development model. Teachers who participated in the workshop were able to overall support the same level of student achievement in ECS as those teachers who were fully endorsed in computer science, end quote. Okay, and having spoken with Joanna Good many times and again interviewed her on the podcast, I really like ECS. It sounds phenomenal. But I don't know if we can necessarily say that it's the professional development model that led to this kind of success or if it's actually the curriculum itself that led to it. And I say this because there are some curriculum providers in kind of really any subject area that I'm aware of where they kind of have like a curriculum in a box where they advertise it as, well, you don't even need to be qualified to teach this. It does it for you. And it takes out all of the difficulties of the teacher and it makes it so that students can learn on their own. And so while that makes it a whole lot easier for the adult in room who is maybe teaching or not teaching, it doesn't really make it so that it empowers the teacher to become an expert in that particular area. So in this particular instance, having not gone through ECS, what I don't know is how much of it is the curriculum itself that is like making it so that the students are having a great experience with this, and then how much of it is the professional development that supports the teachers to be able to teach the curriculum or a combination of those two. And again, I don't know. I have a feeling that it's both and that they both are supporting this, just knowing the people involved with this particular curriculum who have created it. But I'm not sure. But the next subsection for this particular area is 3.4.2. And so this talks about comparing how the additional courses takings before and after the enactment of the graduation requirements. So like, did students continue to take computer science after the graduation requirement was enacted at a rate that was higher than before it was enacted? Here's a quote from page 11, quote, overall, about 17% of students who completed a computer science class prior to the enactment of the graduation requirement took an additional computer science class. After the enactment, about 18% of students who completed a computer science class took an additional computer science class. This increase in the probability of students taking an additional computer science class after the enactment of the computer science graduation requirement was small, but statistically significant, end quote. And a little bit further down on that page, quote, across all cohorts, students who identified as female were 50% less likely to take additional computer science courses relative to students who identify as male. In addition, students who identify as Hispanic were 13% less likely to take additional computer science coursework relative to students who identify as students of other racial and ethnic backgrounds, end quote. I'm curious if they were to share the inverse of that, the opposite of that, where they're like for different racial demographics based off of like the data that they had on here in some of the earlier sections, were Asian students more likely than other race and ethnicities to want to participate. And I don't know. But going back to the idea that only 17% participated before the graduation requirement and then 18% chose to participate after that, that might be like, okay, whoop-de-doo, you got like a 1% increase. Like what, how is that helpful? Well, when it comes to the overall numbers, if we think about how it was a small subset of students who were participating beforehand, and then when the graduation requirement was enacted, a larger population of people, even if it stayed exactly at 17%, you're still getting more students participating and therefore going to need even more computer science classes. So from an advocacy standpoint, you're increasing the numbers overall, even if you are not increasing the percentage of people who participate. So in the conclusion, the authors talk about the PROSPER framework, which stands for Programs, Research, Organizational Structure, and Policy for Equitable Results. So I highly recommend taking a look at this particular section if you want to learn more about like the background of how they were doing this. But here's an interesting quote that is from page 13. Quote, teachers are the most important ingredient to success. Schools should focus on capacity building before enacting significant policies, end quote. Now, this really, really, really resonated with me. So having worked with like teachers around the country, I can say that if you are all of a sudden going to make a policy change, but you don't have the capacity in place, it's not really going to go anywhere pretty fast. You have to really hit the ground running. So like when I was still teaching in the K-8 classes in Avondale, the superintendent made a shift so that all of the K-8 mandatory technology classes were going to 100% only teach coding classes. Now to support this rollout, we had to have a full-time person who was dedicated to mentoring the computer science teachers in the district. And that ended up being me in the second and third year that was in that district. But in the first year, it was somebody else. And so in order to support that, we had to have constant professional development for 1 or 3 hours each week to kind of like dive into the content knowledge to really understand how to do computer science before we could understand how to teach computer science. So if you are really interested in kind of making this graduation requirement, that's great, but you're gonna need to have the capacity of teachers who can teach this in order to actually fulfill the like demand that's going to come from this. So if you're gonna all of a sudden have, instead of like 20 students participating, you're going to have 100 students participating, you're gonna need teachers who are going to be able to help out with that. And so again, it sounds like exploring computer science is a great option for the classes in high school. I've also heard some good things about the high school program for code.org. I believe it's CS Discoveries. So I highly recommend taking a look at that as well. But there are many options out there besides just doing like AP computer science. You can do an intro course into computer science topics or like an app development course or whatever. There are many different options out there. Hopefully this paper serves as kind of like a potential framework or a heuristic to think through if you're going to implement a graduation requirement in your district. But I want to now kind of talk about some of my lingering thoughts and questions, which is something that I like to do at the end of these solo episodes. So the first question that I have is just like, I wish I had more data to get more granular about the impact. So for instance, what was the impact on students during high school and after graduation? So how did their participation impact other subject areas? Like, did their math scores change at all for better or for worse, or did they stay the same? That would be really interesting to know whether or not computer science as a graduation requirement would have some kind of an impact on mathematics or science or, I don't know, whatever subject area. Did this also have any kind of impact on students pursuing computing careers? So while only the increase was from 17% to 18%, was there a higher likelihood of students who pursued a computing career? So even if there wasn't an increase in the number of students participating in classes after this intro course, maybe it led to a higher rate of people who ended up pursuing some kind of a computing career. That would be really interesting to know. How did this also impact the open job? So if you look several years down the road, or even like a decade from now, how would this impact any of the open jobs in computing? But then to kind of like argue with that, one of the things that has been really fascinating to see is the recent developments with AI in relation to art and writing with like ChatGPT. And I'm curious, are there going to be so many open jobs in the next decade or two? And I don't know, because with ChatGPT, it can actually write out some code for you depending on what kind of a prompt you give it. And so rather than having to hire, I don't know, 5 programmers, maybe you only hire one who is able to kind of like outsource some of the writing process to ChatGPT, and they kind of do the refining or the editing of what the AI develops for them. So you only need one person, and maybe you pay them at a higher rate, but it's not as much as if you had to pay 5 people. I don't know. We're really kind of at the nascent period of all of this in terms of AI and creativity and jobs and whatnot. So it'd be really interesting to see a decade or two from now how things are going to be impacted. But I guess that also kind of relates to one of the bigger arguments or rationales for why some people think computer science needs to be in the classroom is jobs. Well, if there are not jobs down the road, what is the advocacy like headline for computer science education? Are we going to need one? Is computer science education going to be something that should be a core requirement? I don't know. Maybe it's going to be computational literacies like I talked about in a previous podcast episode unpacking Kafai and Proctor's paper on that particular topic, which is kind of like a more nuanced discussion on computational thinking. So I highly recommend checking out that episode if you have not done so yet. I'll include a link to that in the show notes at jaredoleary.com. So another question that I have, or a lingering thought, is how did this course requirement negatively impact students? So were there less electives or less of some other requirement? Like, did they have one less math requirement? Like, for instance, when I was in high school, I took two math classes in my junior year. And one of the reasons why is because I took a math class as like pre-calc or something. And then the computer science class counted as a math credit. So I was able to fulfill another credit by taking computer science. Maybe they, instead of having like four math requirements, they only had three and then they replaced it. Or maybe they added it in addition to that. If that's the case, did that then take away from another elective? So like for myself, it was very hard my freshman and sophomore year to have electives because I was in band and I was going to be in band all 4 years. And so that really limited the number of electives that I could take. And it made it so that I could only take like typing class, I think, my freshman year, and had no other electives outside of that. But maybe they talk about this in other papers or in other writings, but I don't know based off of what I read. And maybe I missed it. So another question that I have is how might other districts support similar requirements in their schools? So for example, could districts partner with universities to prepare pre-service educators, again, to build up that capacity that the authors highly recommend having? Or could you partner with PD providers who teach a person to fish rather than making you reliant on buying the same fish? So again, going back to like the curriculum in a box, like are you creating a professional development experience that teaches that content knowledge and the pedagogical knowledge that is inclusive of identities? Or are you just providing a curriculum that does all that for the teacher, and then in the end, they don't actually learn the content knowledge? They're just kind of facilitating without actually being able to teach anything. I don't know. So every district is going to be different in terms of how they end up implementing, but it's going to be something that districts will need to consider if you're going to do some kind of a graduation requirement. How will you be able to build up that capacity? And there is no right or wrong way to do it. It's just you got to spend some time really sitting through that and thinking through that. The last question that I got is how might the district have achieved the same results without the graduation requirement? So it's great that they had impact, but what other solutions might exist without making schooling even more one size fits all through more requirements? So in other words, instead of making it so that everybody is kind of like coming out of high school with the same course requirements and experiences at the end of it, are there ways that we could have had the same results without doing another graduation requirement or eliminating graduation requirements altogether across all subject areas? And I know I've talked about this quite a bit, and I currently have not had anyone on who has argued with me on this, so I'm going to keep making this radical statement and hope that eventually somebody is going to come on this podcast episode and tell me what they think about why that would not work out well in the long run to be able to have individualized or customized or bespoke curricular experiences in K through 12 or even higher education, where students are able to walk out of it with individualized expertise rather than having the same general knowledge as everybody else around them. I think employers are going to likely want to hire somebody who is very good at something to be able to do that thing for their organization rather than just a generalist where everybody kind of like who applies knows the same thing as everybody else. But I don't know. I'm not really in that position where I'm having to make those kind of decisions or worry about that right now. So that was my kind of quick summary of this paper itself and then some lingering questions or thoughts. If you'd like to be a guest on this particular podcast, feel free to contact me at jaredoleary.com. There is a contact me button up there. And if you'd be so kind, please consider sharing this episode with somebody else. I really enjoy creating these podcasts, and I'd like to just kind of share some scholarship and share some interviews with some wonderful people with the rest of the world. So if you could share with somebody else or leave a review or whatever, that would be much appreciated. I have noticed that there have been some more reviews on other platforms. Thank you so much. It helps more people find it. But just simply liking it or sharing it, retweeting it or reposting it on LinkedIn, whatever. some great opportunities to help spread the word about the free resources at jaredoleary.com. And there's going to be plenty more to come as I've been working on them quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. But I hope you all have a wonderful week. I hope you all stay safe and stay tuned for next week for another episode.